WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Ryan and Ely and I are just talking real time. Where are we headed here? Well, here's where we're headed. We're going to talk about this economic growth issue that's plaguing Washington, number one. Number two, we're going to go right back to the phones. So hang on if you are calling from Noonan or Atlanta or Decatur. We'll be right with you. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Quick weather, cloudy today, 40% chance of scattered showers, thunderstorms this afternoon. High 86, lows tonight of 70. Same tomorrow, chance of thunderstorms goes up even more to 60%, high 87, low 69. Weather brought to you by Shoemate. Hard to get adjusted to the steaminess of Atlanta weather after being back last weekend in Michigan on the lake, Lake Michigan, Holland, Lake Mecotow up there, a little bit of a breeze. I went up to a place called Petoskey, a little place called Lake Walloon for a day. And it's magical, especially when you can get weather in the high 70s in the middle of the summer. But it's a long drive with four kids back home. It took us 15 hours to get home. Way too many rest stops. That's just the way it is with a bunch of kids. But happy, just always happy to be home in Atlanta. Just no matter how amazing a place is afar, there's nothing like being here at home. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Happy to be with you here this morning, Sunday morning on WSB Radio. This place, by far the best programming on the planet. And we're here to help on a Sunday morning like we typically do. So we're going to go to the phones in a minute here. But I go back to this issue that goes back to the press will call it populism. Well, really, populism just means people are fed up with the system and the government, and they elect someone new. So we see great political change. We've seen it here in the United States. We saw it in Europe. We've seen it in the Philippines, for God's sakes. We've seen it all over the world. And it goes back to this one simple fundamental problem, and that's a lack of economic growth. 1965 to 08, that's over 50 years, the United States grew at a very steady average clip of over 3% a year, 3.1% on average. Since the Great Recession hit the entire world, we've only been growing at 1.9 to 2. That may not sound like an enormous shift, but that's a 35% slowdown in what was a more than 50-year trend. So we got used to it. It wasn't a blip. It was a life. It was a generational trend of growth. Let me put that into context for you with miles per hour, since we're talking about driving. Let's do the math real quick. Let's say you're used to driving at 60 miles an hour. 60 miles an hour, right? That's a non-frustrating. I'd rather go faster than that coming back from Michigan. But let's say you're used to going 60 miles an hour. Now you're going to reduce that by 35%. Now you're going 39. That's the math. 60 minus 35%. Now you've just slowed down on I-75 South, coming back into Atlanta, and now you have to go 39 miles an hour on this long trip from Michigan. You know how frustrating that would be? First of all, you get run over coming back in through Tennessee. You just get plowed over by a semi-truck, first of all. That's exactly what happens. Just 39 is too slow to go without being frustrating. And that's resulted, that slowdown has resulted in a $2.6 trillion cost. That's how much economic growth we would have had we continued to grow at that same 3.1% GDP growth pace. That has, again, that's not been the case. We've slowed down. So the economic volatility that we've seen has translated into political volatility. Something broke in the 07, 08, 09 recession. And it's been smaller, slower growth ever since. And it's also led to outbursts like the Jamie Dimon one we've seen this week. He said, look, the U.S. has become one of the most bureaucratic, confusing, litigious societies on the planet. He said, it's almost an embarrassment. Now, I'm not going to be embarrassed because there's still no better place to do business on the planet. But it really does go back to, if we can't get something done, and it's, and again, it's not about just corporations. It's not just about reducing tax rates for big companies. It's for every American. So if the administration can make some breakthroughs in tax reform and in infrastructure, and they're, and I do think they're doing a decent job with regulatory reform on a corp, all this on a corporate level, it translates to growth for small businesses and jobs and wage growth, which again, we still have not seen wage growth for years. That's this $2.6 trillion worth of growth that we've been missing. Now, let's go back to this political disclosure, called a political discourse index, that gives us statistical proof of Washington conflict. It's called the Partisan Conflict Index, and it's maintained by the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. There's an economist, Mariana Azamonte. He invented the index. It calculates the number of political discourse words that we see in publications. So it, think of this as an algorithm that tracks words like gridlock and filibuster and veto. And the higher the index level, the greater the conflict we see between the political parties. And it tracks, again, Wall Street, it goes, the algorithm goes in with an x-ray and seeks these words out in a daily basis from Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, LA Times, Washington Post, you name it. And back in 2008, the index stood at about 80. As of this past June, it's over 200. So discourse has been rising and rising. It's 24% higher than it was only 2 years ago. The peak was back in October 2013, which is just a brief stint during the government shutdown. But it continues to show that there is real measured discourse, conflict in Washington. And the problem with that is that not only is it frustrating for CEOs, it really leads to this discourse, or the, as discourse elevates, it slows down corporate investment decisions. And in turn, it slows down the pace of economic recovery. And that's part of the research that Azamonte has done. But that's where we stand. And that's the issue we see with Washington and the economy. And we'll see if it gets any better this year. Perhaps it will. You may be saying, Wes, you're awfully optimistic. We'll see. Let's go to the phones and deal with the real world. Again, the number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. You can also call us at 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to Myron, who joins us from Atlanta. Myron, what's going on? How can we help?
How you doing, Wes?
Good.
Good, good, man. It's a pleasure to talk to you, and I enjoy the show. My question was, I have a five-year-old son, and I have a one-year-old son. And I got introduced to a financial planner in Miami. I'm in Atlanta because I'm a personal chef for NFL players, so I got introduced to this financial planner, and he gave me a...
Fun, man. That sounds awesome. Personal chef for an NFL player. You're in Atlanta. You're dealing with a guy in Miami. You got a five-year-old to one-year-old. That sounds like the beginning of a good movie, Myron. I love it.
Yeah, man. It's great, man. You know, I've done Trevor Jones and Usher, too, but getting back to this fixed index universal life insurance policy that was introduced to me for the kids, and it's at 7%, and it also has a 6% and a 5% on here. But my question was that they said that within this plan, if any kind of emergency was to happen and you have to take money out for kids, that this money would not be taxed.
So let me ask you another couple quick questions on this. So the kids are 1 and 5. This is something that's been pitched to you for a savings for them or for your retirement?
Well, actually, this is for them, not for my retirement, but he also talked to me, too, as well. But we're more interested in getting the kids involved, because one of the players that I grew up with, he introduced me to him, and he said it worked well for him within the last 2 years.
Mm, okay. Well, I've got something to say about this in a second, though. And then how much do they want you to put in each year or each month into a contract like this?
Okay, so the premium says the... initial plan premium is $1,300, and then it has slash year 1 to 46. Total premium paid is $59,846.
So I'm just going to save you a lot of angst on this, Myron. This kind of thing is one of the very worst investment products that you can possibly consider. And I've seen it over and over and over again. And the problem here is that you're trying to deal with a hybrid type product. You've got it's an investment product, but it's also a life insurance product. And if you don't stick to the schedule, and you just mentioned, you said from year one to 46, again, year one to 46. I mean, that is a generation. Who knows what the world will be like in 2 years, let alone 46 years, right? These projections, the problem with these universal life policies is that you have to stay committed to them for such a long period of time, meaning you got to put the same amount of money in over and over and over and over again. And the reality is that your income, most people in America, our incomes don't stay like that and as predictable as you'd like them to be. It may seem predictable today, but let's say in 2 years, you go through a rough patch, or 5 years, something happens, or 8 years from now, you've got a big expense. Oh, now the kids need to go to private school, and that's going to cost us. So there's so many unexpecteds that come up in your own financial planning. The worst thing you can do is lock yourself into something that you have to stay committed to, or else it blows up. And that's the problem with a lot of these universal life policies. If you don't continue on the same premium course for an extraordinarily long period of time, it really messes with the contracts. And all of a sudden, what looks like this beautiful rainbow of financial planning becomes a dark thundercloud. And that's why, and I've seen it happen over and over and over again. On paper, these things look amazing. But you know what? So does pretty much everything else if you extrapolate it over 50 years. So stay, please, for me, between you and me, stay away from anything that is a multi-hybrid products, universal life, well, mixed with investments that you see these long projections on. You just, in the real world, things happen, things come up, and these plans end up really regretting that you did it. What can you do besides this? You want to do something for the kids, man. Just set up an automatic dividend reinvestment account with a really good Vanguard ETF or mutual fund. That's what you need to do. And put $1,300 a year into something like Vanguard Dividend Growth for each kid, and do $1,500 a year. Do $200, do $100 a month. That way that you can habitually let the money dividend reinvest, compound for the kids. And if you run into a period of time where you can't quite commit to that, then you can take a break and it's no big deal. You don't want to do that when you lock yourself into one of these policies. So keep it simple, Myron. And if you have further questions on that, feel free to contact me through my website as well. WesMoss.com. That's WESMOSS. Contact button upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the team. And thank you, my friend, for the call. More Money Matters right here, WSB, straight ahead.
Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
And good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Wes Moss here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. Find us online at WesMoss.com under the money section of the website. That's where you want to read. We've got a lot to talk about. Let me just go right to a quick recap of this first half of the year. And just not a lot of volatility. The market highs, as we talked about earlier today in the show, very little volatility. The first half of this year had the second smallest drawdown, which means the peak to trough, in history. During the first 6 months of 2017, the largest decline was just about 3%. And the only year we've seen a smaller decline happened back in 1995, when stocks only pulled back about 1.7%. Now, what does that mean for the second half is the question. Arguably, it might not mean anything. But if you go back and look at the five years with the smallest drawdowns in the beginning of the year, just to see if any patterns will, if there's any sort of pattern, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is this: in every instance, The second half of the year saw larger drawdowns, so bigger volatility, bigger corrections. Which, quite, if you think about this, the correction this year so far has been 2.8%. That's nothing. That can happen in a day. So that makes sense. The worst correction we saw in those 5 years was a 15% or back. That was 2015. The good news is this: in each year that we looked at, the market built on its first half gains and finished higher during the second half as well as.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Still overcast from what I can see outside here on Peachtree. Weather today, cloudy today, 40% chance of scattered thunderstorms this afternoon, high 86, lows tonight of 70, more of the same tomorrow with higher chance of thunderstorms around 60%, high of 87, low 69, weather brought to you by Shoemate. Good morning, welcome back to Money Matters here. The number here in the studio with your questions. So we've hopefully helped a lot of families today. We talked about investment products. There were calls today about, should I buy this annuity or should I buy this variable life insurance? Or we helped a family that was struggling with paying for the final year of college with kids, trying to benchmark that or juggle that with being really close to retirement. Like so many families try to get to retirement. You're trying to meet all these goals, college and retirement all at the same time. And it's difficult. It's really hard to do. And there's no perfect answer to any of it. There's obviously a lot of ways to come at all these different problems. And we're here to talk that through and try to help you do that on a Sunday morning. It's the fun part about Money Matters. We love to do it. And so give us a call here in the studio. We have time for probably at least one or two more questions here today on the show. The number, again, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. And we're happy to take those calls and help you through. So many families are always faced with trying to get to retirement, and now you're hit with all of these financial obligations and liabilities all at the same time, and it makes for such a difficult path. And a lot of times we're really a tiebreaker here on the radio, just trying to help people get to a place where they make a practical decision that they can live with and they can feel good about, and they get on the right path. And that's what we're here to talk about on Sunday mornings. So again, phone lines open, 404-872-0750, or you can call us 1-800-WSB-TALK. And we'll go to the phones in just a minute. But I want to also talk about this Janet Yellen, which really spurred the market this week. Again, another net positive week for the markets. This is a really, we keep calling this an unloved bull market. Up about 1% for the Dow in the week, up 1.4% for the S&P 500, 2.6% for the NASDAQ. And we were at this point where the markets just continue to grind higher, and accompanied by just complete lack of enthusiasm. You know, it's the same lack of enthusiasm we've seen all year, which is really not a bad thing. It's a lack of exuberance, which is a positive to me. What I want to talk about here with Yellen, I'm calling Janet Yellen Goldilocks, Janet Goldilocks Yellen. And she strikes again, because this is the Goldilocks term I've used now for several years. And in an economic state, it's about this uniquely balanced economy with data in a number of ways. So first, not falling completely or teetering on a recession, but also not revving the economic engine at 7,000 RPMs. It's, quote, just right. That's what Goldilocks really means for the economy. In an economy that we've been living in, it's not, quote, just right in terms of the perfect economy. It hasn't been gangbusters. It hasn't been fruitful for everybody. But Goldilocks means that it's just right to maintain this low level of growth. And we talked about that today. Part of the problem in Washington, or politically, is that we've had growth, but not enough growth. And it's a frustrating place to be. But it allows the Federal Reserve to be patient. Remember, an antsy Fed can pull the rug right out of an otherwise decent economic environment. If they raise interest rates too quickly, then borrowing rates skyrocket and it chokes off economic activity. If they do too much easy money, aka ultra low interest rates forever, then they create bubbles that then eventually pop. So the Fed has to be threading the needle on very gradual rate rises. And this week, Janet Yellen continued to walk that tightrope without disaster. So she reiterated this week, again, that the interest rate environment, the hikes that we've been seeing, not a lot of them, but a few, they're going to stay gradual. And as soon as she said that, markets went off to the races again, up another 1%. So the economic data continues to drive this Goldilocks sentiment. So inflation data this week, not enough to scare us about deflation, but still below the Fed's target of 2%. And retail sales dropped 0.2%, not great, but still up 2.8% year over year. That's the same story we've been living with. Inflation, warm. Economy, warm. And not hot, not cold, just right there, Goldilocks in the middle. And the Fed tailwind continues. So instead of rates going up this September, probably won't happen now, probably not until December before we see rates go up again. We're going to go to the phones here. 404-872-0750. Patrick joins us from Gainesville. Patrick, what's going on? How can we help, man?
Hi, quick question. I just wanted to know your thoughts on individual stock for income production nearing retirement age, specifically the Southern Company, versus maybe a bond fund or a utility mutual fund or utility-based mutual fund, just to create safe income for retirement age or nearing retirement age.
So the answer here to me is that I'll get specific for your question, is that, yes, I still own utilities. Yes, you hear this worry. Here's the worry with utilities, is that rates go up, just like I was just talking about. If interest rates skyrocket, then you look at a utility and you say, well, you know, look, 4.5% from a utility company like Southern, is that today it looks really good relative to a 2.3% Treasury note. But when a Treasury note gets back to 4.5, now, hey, the Southern companies in the world don't look as good because they're not growing like gangbusters and they don't pay a lot, again, relative to Treasuries. That's, Patrick, though, that's not where we are today. And I don't see the Treasury getting at 4.5% for a very long time. So I still think that these utility names are attractive, particularly for retirees that are looking for income in stable companies. And again, in the world we live in today, with technology completely pulling the rug out of some whole entire industries, I don't see anything happening to the use of the need for electricity and power. So I still like these utility companies. The other thought that's a little bit of a misnomer is that utility companies get crushed when interest rates go up. It's not necessarily the case. They do react in kind of the short term. So if you were to see interest rates spike up a little bit, then you could see Southern Company and utilities, Con Ed, let's say, take a little bit of a hit. But usually, and if you go look historically, these interest rate sensitive areas like utilities and REITs, they do pretty well over a longer period of time when rates are going up, because rates going up mean the economy is getting better. So we need more services. We need more electricity. We need rents can go up at malls, let's say. So economic growth is a good thing long term for these companies. So I still like utilities. Sure,
I'm
they're
right
probably
there you say that.
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in that. Having said that, I'm also a huge believer that you just want to get your income from a lot of different investing components. So the cover of Barron's this week was all about big oil companies. So if you were to read that, it's all about, you know, I think they talked about eight different companies that are in the oil business that make some sense. Pretty shocking statistics to me. Something like the Chevrons and the Exxons of the world, the big giant integrated oil companies, have spent $1.2 trillion over the last 10 years, yet haven't, and this is in exploration and production, yet still haven't really increased their production as much as you might think. So those have been really difficult stocks, but I'm a believer in the pipeline industry. And that's another area, Patrick, where you're going to find 4%, 5%, 6%, 7% annual yields out of these big pipeline companies. And in the industry, and I touched on this a couple weeks ago, and I just published this on westmoss.com, you can find that the pipeline energy industry has gotten some real religion. And they got off track back in 06, 07, 05, 06, 07, when oil prices looked like they were going to go up forever. They wanted to get in the exploration and production business, get away from the steady fee-based world of just moving oil and natural gas around the country. And they got really burned. And they got burned because prices went from over 100, what we were going to, what, 120 in oil, and they went, over 100 in oil all the way down to 26. That really hit the pipeline industry, even though they're not supposed to be tied to the price as per se. They've gotten back to the old toll road model to some extent. So they've got, I've seen companies go from 60% fee base all the way back up to 95%. Fee base. So the MLP space is another area, even if we have range bound oil from 40 to 60, is another place for income. So the point I'm trying to make here is that you want to have income in a very diversified way, not just utilities, not just MLPs, not just bonds. I think it's the answer, typically my favorite answer that I feel most comfortable with, is an all of the above approach where you've got several different areas. They're all producing income. And, oh, by the way, don't forget, not just utility companies, but there's a lot of other sectors out there. The defense sector, not defensive, but companies like the Lockheed Martins of the world, still pay solid dividends, still have a decent outlook over the next several years. And you put that all together, that to me is a safer way to build an income portfolio that you can feel comfortable with for a very long period of time, that'll get through different market environments, different economic cycles. So I know there's a lot of that answer to your question. I think you called to say, hey, should I own utilities? And I gave you a broader answer about that. But the answer is that I still like utilities over the long term, even though we know rates are probably going higher. And I'm even more comfortable using many different areas of the income spectrum. It's weekend prize pack time. Ryan Ely, let's hear the WSB weekend prize pack.
The weekend prize pack's a family four-pack of Gwinnett Braves Anytime tickets, good for any home game at Cool Ray Field, and a pair of tickets to see Idina Menzel on July 22nd at the Fox Theater, produced by AEG Presents. The trivia question: can you tell me, in the state of Georgia, the biggest bank by assets? Just the biggest bank.
Well, you're going local on this. All right, 404-741-0750 for the prize line. Ryan Ely is awaiting your call. Again, 404-741-0750. We've got to do quick news, weather, traffic, then more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750. Straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here, a song that doesn't ever play in my house, because I think that's a song from like a princess type movie, isn't
Frozen.
It? Frozen. I don't think that's one of the few Marvel Disney movies we haven't seen. I don't think my boys would watch Frozen. They just won't do it.
Yeah, I don't see four boys cuddling up to watch Frozen today.
Hey, Dad, let's watch Frozen. Doesn't happen in my house. But I love that we came in with that song. It's awesome. It also gives me a nice chill on a hot, humid day. So what's going on, Ryan? What's the answer to your trivia question, by the way?
What's the largest bank by assets in the state of Georgia? The answer, Angela and Ellenwood, was correct, is SunTrust, which is not where the Gwinnett Braves play.
Isn't there a ballpark named after that now?
Yeah. Small tourist attraction.
Are you going to switch your banking to SunTrust just because of that marketing?
I think it works. I think I'm actually going to do that.
Really? Just because of the... Just because you're...
I can't drive past 285 without seeing a giant SunTrust sign now.
Marketing works?
I guess so.
Gosh, whoever's running marketing at SunTrust right now is just excited to hear that. They're going to get Ryan Ely as a client just because of repetitive.
And it makes me... SunTrust, make, just like Cool Ray Field, you know, when I need something, I call Cool Ray.
Yeah.
It just works. It's at the top of my head.
Yeah, it does work. Hey, listen to this, though. We've got on... One of the things that I wrote about that's coming up in the AJC on Tuesday in the living section has to do with this gap we talk about, filling the gap strategy that we talk a lot about on Money Matters, or we have over the years. But it's really the antidote to what Wall Street will tell you that you need you need $1 million minimum to not be, you know, destitute. $2.5 million you need at least to have a decent life in retirement. And that part of this is that articles are written and they have these big numbers that are associated with it. And it kind of makes you feel like, oh, I'm so behind the eight ball. The reality is that Wall Street has this vested interest to say you need more. It's never enough. Keep working, keep saving. They're publicly traded companies. They need to grow their assets. So they want you to always invest more. And part of what I did with You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, the book that we talk about here on Money Matters, you can find it, of course, on Amazon, You Can Retire Sooner Than You Think, is an answer to that, to say, look, you don't need $2.5 million necessarily just to retire. Yeah, does it make things easier? Absolutely it does. It's easier if you have $5 million. It's easier if you have $10 million. But you don't have to have it in order to get to retirement. And I outline that in the book. And what I write about for the AJC on Tuesday is a strategy called filling the gap that shows you that, hey, listen, you're going to have some Social Security. You may have a little bit of a pension. You might have some of these other income streams. And the only real money you need to fulfill all of your living expenses is that gap. And that's what comes from the investments. And it doesn't need to be $1 million or $2.5 million. Does it make it easier? Sure. So that's an article that look out for the AJC Cover the Living section this Tuesday. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, hey, we're right here in Atlanta. Easy to do so. We get back to you within 48 hours or 24 hours online. Go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Email button, contact button, upper right-hand corner. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful weekend. Stay tuned for the rest of the day. The best programming on the planet right here, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.